today's topic, which is adaptation of special events. This is a time of year when a lot of children's ministers are gearing up for some very special events that have become a wonderful part of the church calendar and really a great way for us to mark time as bodies of Christ, and especially for children. There are things they become very excited in. Maybe you have a Roundup Sunday or a fall kickoff, and that's an important time for kids every year as they get ready to maybe change age levels or Sunday school classrooms. Perhaps you have a fall festival or some kind of trunk or treat or an activity like that coming up. Perhaps you do something special at Thanksgiving or have a fall outreach that is a yearly part of your church schedule. Or there may be a ton of Christmas activities that you do. And these things are ways for us to mark our ministry year. When I was in children's ministry, they were important to me. I wanted to build that into the experience of my children. But I had another issue going on, which is the year I began full-time ministry, my son was also diagnosed with autism. So I became a special needs parent and a full-time minister at the same time. And I've shared that story with you before. One of the things that has benefited me of that is the two became intertwined. And I can't really see one without seeing the other. There's some ways that's just really helped me and aided me and helped me include a lot of children that I wouldn't have been able to before. But at the time, one of the things that was very difficult was to be building these special events and really putting a lot into it, and then realizing that it was going to take some tweaking of that event in order to accommodate this very special little boy who just happened to live in the front bedroom of my house. And I wanted him to be there to be a part of community. I wanted him to be there to get instruction. I wanted him to be there for all kinds of reasons. But oftentimes, special events, because it's a break in routine, because it is something special, because it may be high sensory, was one of the hardest things for my child to be able to do. So today, I have a fantastic guest joining me to talk all about this, give us some tips and ideas, and she's going to talk today to both parents and to other ministers. She's going to talk to everybody about how in the world we can include these kids. And her name is Katie Weatherby. Can you say hi, Katie?
Hi, everybody. How are you?
We are fantastic that you are with us, Katie. Katie is coming to us from Ohio. I have a brief bio on her, which just makes me love her even more than I already do. She's a ministry consultant, and Katie writes for Group and Standard Publishing, but her bio that she sent me said, she loves chocolate cake more than any other food, thinks her two teenagers and husband are wonderful people, has the cutest dog God ever invented, and she's the worst gardener in the world.
That is true. I own that. It's completely true. I tried for years. Every spring I would say, this is the year I'm going to learn to love gardening. And then I turned 40 and I said, you know what, forget it. This is who I am. And I do
life
really,
short.
Really well. And I'm growing children, so that's got to count for something. And they're thriving. So
absolutely. Katie, the humor with which you approached that conversation made me say, of course she knows about how to adapt special events, because you got to know how to change a plan at the last minute and be
Definitely. Flexible.
And that's why I included that bio, is because it spoke flexibility and humor to me. It made me so happy to read it.
Yes, I'm a pre-gardener. Is that a better way to say it?
Absolutely.
Yes, I think maybe that is. Or, you know, if you want dandelions, you know where to get them. My
is
yard.
That's right. It's
for
all
sure.
Well, Katie, tell us how you got started in special needs ministry and advocacy. What your story is?
Well, I majored in special education in college, and I became a special ed teacher. And then my husband and I got married, and I worked as the Sunday school superintendent at our church for a few years, and loved that. And we helped out with the youth group and all of those kinds of things. And then I had babies, and our daughter got really very, very ill when she was 4. She had a stroke. So suddenly I was sort of catapulted out of that teacher and ministry leader chair and into the parent chair. And so very much like your story, suddenly I had to figure out how to navigate this as a parent. And I remember thinking, if I'm having this much trouble after all of the years of training I've had in special education, if I'm having this much trouble, gosh, it must be equally as difficult for people who didn't study about education. And at that point, I met my good friend and business partner, Suzanne Wilcox, and she and I created a consulting company to help parents navigate the special education system. And then for a time, I also worked with Key Ministry, which is a parachurch organization that provides support to churches. So my greatest love is to see parents and ministry leaders and parents and schools all working in concert with one another, because to me, we do so much better for kids when we're all on the same page. So that's kind of my story in a nutshell.
That's fantastic, Katie. It's encouraging to hear you say that, because I think it's beautiful how God can weave those two things together. And it's a redemption story. It's a redemption story of questions that you go through as your parent, as you're headed through. I think that's great. As you and I are discussing adapting events for our listeners, Katie and I Facebook this conversation out and try to decide which way to go with it. We said, you know, should we talk about it event by event? Should we talk about big things? There were so many different approaches Katie and I could take. And we kind of decided to let this develop as we go along. But one of the things we did want to say is kind of talk about, as a special needs topic, a lot of this can either be completely disputed about how to change special events or just not talked about at all. There's never any advice given about how to adapt and change something that really has become sacred almost on a church calendar.
Mm-hmm.
I know why I think that is the case, but I was wondering if you could share that, Katie, why you think so.
You know, as I was thinking about that, because I think it's a really interesting question to ask, I think that we have to remember that when ministry leaders are planning out the year, they're really thinking in terms of large groups of people when they're planning these large-scale events. So if it's an outreach event or vacation Bible school or a big Christmas program, that's their primary focus. And that is hard work. I mean, anyone who has ever planned a large-scale event like that knows that there is not only a ton of long-range planning, but you've got budgets to consider, and you've got to make sure that you're looking at what staff is going to be available. You've got transportation, and, you know, do I have to feed the volunteers? And if so,
absolutely,
how can I work that into the budget? So there's so much going on that it really is something that I think we can do if we're parents of kids with disabilities, or if we're volunteers and we know of folks with disabilities who would like to participate, to offer and say, hey, I would really like to help plan this event. I've got some time. I would really like my child to participate. So let me roll up my sleeves and help you with this, because I know it's a really large-scale event. By and large, ministry leaders are going to welcome your help, and they'll be really glad that they've got an extra pair of hands ready to pitch in. So, and
absolutely,
we can be solution-oriented and say, you know, my child, Alex, for example, has a really difficult time with large motor activities. He has cerebral palsy, for example, and it affects him in such a way that he gets very fatigued. And raking leaves for the senior citizens in our area is probably going to be a hard thing for him to do. I know that's what his age group is tasked with, but if you'll allow it, I would be really happy to host a small group of kids at the church that day, and, you know, I can recruit another adult so that there definitely is good supervision and safe supervision, and we could maybe make some fall cards for the seniors in our community, or we could do a baking project together, or we could decorate the pastor's office and surprise the pastor and encourage him or her. So by offering a solution so that you're not creating work for the pastor or ministry leader who is trying so hard to get this large-scale event off the ground, you might also be able to be a ministry and an encouragement to them and provide them with a little information as you're going along that, oh, gee, this might be a little tricky for such and such a child, but here's how we could accommodate that. Or, gee, you know, I know that Joe really likes raking leaves a lot, but sometimes he tends to wander a little bit, so it will be a really good idea to have an adult volunteer just to keep an eye on Joe. So does that make sense?
Absolutely. I was just as you were thinking, I had a precious volunteer come to me in one of my last years of ministry and realize how difficult Wednesday evenings were for us because it was the time when children's choir was scheduled. And this wasn't necessarily a special event, but it's definitely not a classroom environment. And we had made adaptations to the musical so that Noah could be a part of it. He even had a small speaking role. So adaptations had been made, but it was difficult for him to get through the rehearsals. Or even dress rehearsals. And I had one volunteer who I think was just, she just watched me and she loved me. It's the only thing I can account for. And she just said, and she was getting her master's degree at the time, which even blows my mind. And she said, you know, I can't really teach for you right now on Wednesday evening. She said, but I'd love to make it possible for Noah to be able to handle Wednesday nights and for you not to worry. She said, either as a mom or as a minister, either one. And she came forward with that, just as that being her ministry right then was to help during that season with that. So I think, you know, one of the things I want to say is part of what Katie and I are going to share today, if you're a minister listening to this, this may be a way, if you have a special needs person, there's a volunteer that honchos this kind of ministry, please have them listen to this as an archive so they can get some encouragement, maybe some more ideas. If you're a parent listening, these are some going to be some ideas for you, ways for you to approach your ministry leader about encouraging them to include your very own child. If you're a ministry leader and you're doing this yourself all alone, maybe you listen to this through the ears of, wow, I really need to get somebody who can perform these kind of, get these kind of ideas, these kind of out-of-the-box solutions. So the ideas we're going to float around today are going to be applicable to a lot of different kinds of listeners. And Katie and I are just praying that this is going to be a blessing to whoever picks up the podcast. It just makes perfect sense, Katie.
Well, and I think you said something really good, just, you know, in terms of brainstorming ideas. I really so firmly believe that ministry should not be done in isolation. It is not a one-man sport, because I might have an idea for accommodating someone at Vacation Bible School that sparks an idea that you have, Vanji, that gives someone else on your ministry team the very idea that is really going to work. And when we work together, we spark those great ideas. All of us do as the body of Christ. So it's also a great opportunity to sit and brainstorm a little bit and learn from each other, because we all have had different experiences, and what works for one child might not work for another, but it might spark an idea that really will work. So I think that that's really important too.
Absolutely. And I think something that you just mentioned leads perfectly into our next question. Before we get too deep into some of the specific details, the big question that I think fuels everything we do is, you know, why are we making adaptations to events that are maybe just peripheral? They're just add-on things that we do. This is not the every-week things to include those people with special needs. And, Katie, I want to give the answer that I know you already gave me as we discussed this, because it was beautiful.
Well, to me, Jesus says, let the little children come to me. And my good friend and colleague Rebecca always says, he didn't say, let the kids who are quiet and listen the first time come to me. And he didn't say, let the kids who don't sit in a wheelchair come to me. He said, let the kids come to me, all of them, every single one. And when we don't engage kids and adults with disabilities within our body in outreach events, in social events, in programming, we miss out. They are part of our body. That is the church with the capital C. And when we don't have them present, we're not complete. So it's really what should drive every decision that we make in church, because we want to be the whole bride of Christ.
Absolutely, absolutely. And there's something about realizing, when you come to realize that without them, you're almost like an amputee. There's something missing. And it took me longer to learn that lesson than I wish it had. I think part of me felt guilty as a mom for asking for the inclusion. I give a lot of credit to volunteers at Southwest Christian Church in East Point, Georgia, who stood behind me as a minister and said, "No, we think he can." And a lot of times did things when I didn't even have to ask, because at that point I was a mom. And they loved him that much, made him part of the body. And that faithfulness to include over time has yielded a tremendous kingdom harvest that I haven't even seen the end of yet.
I think it just brings me back to a conversation I had with my dear friend Julie. You know, after our daughter was out of the hospital and was doing better, and she was learning how to talk and walk again, and you know, really on the path to healing, I was trying to process everything that had happened to us. And I said, you know, a lot of people keep telling me, well, it was God's will that this happened to her, and God planned it. And we were sort of parking in a different place. We were saying, you know, we believe God knew it was going to happen, but we also believe that when she got sick, God's heart was the first heart to break. And we believe he wept with us. He knows what it's like to have a child who's broken and hurting. And so I just kept saying to Julie, I don't think God made this happen to her. And she said, well, no, I agree with you. But she said, your theology is incomplete here. She said, because you can't discount the story about when the disciples were asking Jesus, why was this man born blind? Was it his mother's sin? Was it his father's sin? Who was it that screwed up that made it so that he was born this way? And Jesus said it was neither. It was so the works of God could be displayed in him. And Julie said, you don't know what God is going to do with your daughter's life. And I think that's true of all people, not just people with disabilities, but especially as we're talking about this precious subject today, we've got to remember that we're serving alongside the apple of God's eye here. He loves these kids, and they've got a lot to offer us and teach us, and we really are incomplete without them. So we've got to sort of nudge people a little bit out of the mindset of, well, we're including them and that's doing this really nice thing, and aren't we a great church because we're including? Well, yeah, we are. But Jesus not only served his people, he served with them, alongside them, and as one of them. And so we can really go deeper here in terms of our relationships with the folks that we set out to serve, kids with disabilities, but also we can, because of them, we're going deeper in our relationship with the Lord.
Absolutely. And what I hear you saying, and I just applaud every word you said, is that you begin to have a new framework. You know, Barb Newman calls it seeing things with a new set of glasses. And you start to see things differently, and you reframe your entire thought process about all of a sudden it doesn't even feel like inclusion. It feels like making sure the whole body is there.
Absolutely.
And as we do
that,
though,
Barb Newman.
She's just the best. She's my hero. I want to be Barb when I grow up.
Isn't she awesome?
She's fantastic. But as we do that, even for me, with it living in my home and being so prevalent in my church, it seemed at first overwhelming to change or tweak programming Mm-hmm. There were parts of it that were just seemed in conflict to me. Can you give us a few ways, things that we need to reframe, things that we need to consider in order to include children, like the kind of things that we need to look for as we're looking at an event? Some I'm sure will be more obvious than others.
Sure. And again, like we talked about before, I think it's so much a matter of gentle, solution-oriented conversations. So being willing to serve on a ministry team, if your missions team does a huge outreach event every fall, being a volunteer from children's ministry that also serves on that missions team so that you can provide the input, hey, we've got a group of kids that's really, those kids are going to want to participate, but we might have to do this differently. I'm going to brainstorm some ideas and see what might fit with your overall vision for this event. You know, and parents can do the same thing. With that said, we've got to remember that parents of kids who have disabilities are incredibly stretched emotionally, physically, financially, and often time-wise they are stretched to the breaking point because kids have therapies and extra homework and tutors and doctor's appointments. So there's no guilt here for parents at all. If you can't pitch in an extra way, that's okay. But think of what you can do, you know, just leaving a voicemail or sending an email to a pastor saying, hey, my child had a really great experience today and I appreciate everything you're doing. It means a lot to our family. Those are ways to show an investment in the body of Christ as well, to lift up and encourage. Things like offering to donate items that can be used on a Vacation Bible School stage set, where you can just grab those things from your house and say, yep, they're on my front porch. Anybody can pick them up. You can use them for as long as you need to. So those are some little ways. And again, it's so much more about looking at this in terms of culture rather than looking at it in terms of what can I buy, what activity can I do. It's more about relationships. And sometimes that takes a little bit longer and it's a little trickier, but it's so worth it in the long run. Is that answering your question?
Absolutely. I think that, you know, what I hear you saying, especially for the parent that's there, so often, and I've encountered this as a parent in the public school system. I love our public school system, but we have a saying in the autistic community that when you've met one autistic child, you've met one autistic child.
You've met one kid with autism, right.
Exactly. And I'm sure that applies to many, many disabilities. Mm-hmm. So if we have parents listening, one of the most helpful things to help a church adapt an event, I think, is to help them learn more about your child and what they can do. Again, with that strengths-based approach that says, you know, they love to help. They enjoy doing these things. These are their interests. They really want to be a part of this event. I want them to be a part of this event. Here's some of the things that I'm kind of concerned about. And if you can be more specific with a ministry leader and give them those specific things, rather than it being an overwhelming task, to find a way to include your child, again, if you're a parent listening, that ministry leader can have some specific, concrete things and may have an immediate fix or an immediate volunteer or situation that will be a fix. So, I mean, that's what I hear you saying is, from the parent side, that partnership that doesn't always require you be there as the shadow for your child, but providing information and support in other ways is
absolutely. Is, and we have had a course at our church years ago, done by this darling lady, Linda Flood, and she called it Satisfied Service. And what she did was work with people to help them discover what their giftedness is, so that they could actually volunteer in ways that would be meaningful and would suit the gift set that they'd been given. And I think we've got to look at kids in those terms as well. Not every kid is going to want to stand up on stage and recite scripture at the Christmas pageant. Not every kid is going to be able to put a shepherd's robe on because it might not feel right. It might feel itchy, or they might not want anything around their head. And that's okay, because when we look at this biblically, not everybody was a shepherd. You know, there was an innkeeper, and there were kings that came, and we had a mom and a dad in that whole story of the Christmas pageant. So not everybody has to be a shepherd. We can have kids who are welcoming people into the worship center. We can have kids who just like to sing in the choir, and then they like to sit with mom and dad as soon as the song is finished, and that's okay too. We can have kids that help to create bulletin art so that when people arrive, they've got a lovely bulletin. I have one kid that we've worked with who is just a spectacular artist. She doesn't love being on stage, but she blesses people with her artwork on a consistent basis. So I think it's important that we look at kids that way when we're able. Now, in larger churches, that just becomes so much harder. So we need to rely on our small group leaders to have a closer look at that, and we also need to rely on relationships with parents to help us figure out what might be a good fit, what's a good way to serve if your child would like to participate in this. So, again, we're going back to really good communication.
Good communication and that cooperative effort. I know I've recommended it many times before, but if you're a minister listening and trying to get more information about a child, or if you're a parent listening and wanting to give information to a children's minister, there is a free downloadable book at heartshaper.com that's an All About Me template scrapbook that's all about me, and it's a strengths-based scrapbook where the pages are already filled out. All you have to do is write in some answers to some questions, maybe put on some snapshots of your child. Or if you're a ministry leader and you're trying to get to know a child, you can print that all from heartshaper.com on the special needs tab and maybe give that to a parent and say, I'm seeking to learn your child's strengths. I think this would help with special events and help us get to know your child and make them a part of the body of Christ here. It's a wonderful communicative tool. I've been told by public school teachers and gym coaches at the gym and even therapists that it saved a lot of time and it helped.
Absolutely, absolutely. And when I was with Key Ministry, we developed something called a Grow Plan, which and that is a free download as well. You can go to the Key Ministry website, keyministry.org, and that allows every family, not just families raising kids with disabilities, but just to talk a little bit about what they hope their kids can accomplish at church in the calendar year. So how they want their kids to grow in their relationship with God is the G, and the R is relationships with others. O is outreach, so learning where their giftedness is, and then W is the understanding and participation in worship. So because when we have shared expectations, that is one of the greatest strengths that we can have in terms of growing ministry, growing kids, and helping families and churches to thrive together is having those shared expectations. So that can be a really helpful thing as well.
Absolutely. And that's going to take care of a lot of finer points as you go along the way. For instance, had I been filling out a grow plan for Noah under the area of worship, still one of our largest areas is noise sensitivity. It has been much worse than it is now. We went to a Braves game day before yesterday, and I was amazed at how well he did.
Oh, that's great,
at a baseball
Andy.
Game. Yeah, with just headphones on and some earplugs in, but he was very relaxed. But I can remember
a time
when it would have been so difficult. But if then, had I been filling that plan out, I would have said I would love for him to be a part of worship. But noise is so difficult, I haven't figured out a way to make it work. You know, and that's going to take care of a lot of sensory issues a child might have. It's going to keep – and it, for a ministry staff, it makes you feel more proactive, like you're not wondering what the sensory problem is going to be, what the emotional difficulty might be, what social or behavioral need they may have, mm-hmm. if that can be covered in some kind of a just a little comprehensive way before an event.
And it also seems
to make you a part of that child's life.
Right, and it goes right back, and I keep harping on the issue of communication, but if ministry leaders are aware of the fact that in any church setting, in any church, there's going to be children with disabilities, that's just statistically, it's a fact. So
yes.
When planning these events, to have a little line or two on the bulletin announcement or on the information sheet, we understand special needs at our church, and our hope is that our entire church body can participate fully in this event. If you have special needs, please tell us so that we can accommodate you and you can serve alongside us. Just that little tiny statement is communicating that, yep, we get it, we understand, and we want to be helpful because we're incomplete without you.
Yeah, and it says to me, and we're listening.
Mm-hmm.
We're listening. We're ready to listen, to hear about your child, to learn
mm-hmm.
more about them,
mm-hmm.
to learn what it means to be their friend.
Right.
Being my child's friend requires some special things. But the people that are willing to hear and that I've been willing to communicate it with,
mm-hmm.
that I and a lot of parents are afraid to communicate
mm-hmm.
some of these things, afraid their child may be judged. And ministers constantly come to me and say, why won't the parent be honest with me? And
mm-hmm.
I can tell them, well, I can explain it to you, but I can't promise it'll make sense.
Well,
because
and sometimes,
some of them do have a legacy of being turned away, and we have
mm-hmm.
to just create that positive environment that you've been talking about.
Well, and I think
to invite
too,
them in.
You know, sometimes we look at Sunday, and what does the Bible say about Sundays? It's a day of rest, right? And sometimes
mm-hmm.
parents just wish that disability would just take a day off, and it's the one day I don't have to think about goals and objectives and my child's social needs or the fact that my child can't read fluently or the fact that every time the music gets turned up, my child has a complete meltdown. It's just exhausting, and some parents are grieving. They may be in denial of what's going on. And they just don't want to talk about it. And you know what? The lucky thing for us at church is that we don't have to diagnose. We don't
Absolutely.
Have to write down specific goals and objectives for this kid, like the public school. We have to love them and help them to worship with us because they're part of our family. So we sort of have to take parents where they are, you know, and help them to develop a relationship, develop that trust so that they might feel more comfortable disclosing. But if they don't, we still look at kids in terms of what are this kid's strengths, what are this kid's needs, and how can we make this work so that they, in fact, can serve and use the gifts that God gave them.
Okay. Let's talk about some specific events or issues within events that you personally have seen in need of adaptation and some solutions. I mean, and we can jump from
right.
event to event here, you know, just if we've got some people listening saying, hey, you know, wow, that makes sense to me. I'm not doing a fall festival, but I am doing this, and I
sure.
can use that idea here.
Sure.
What
well,
you think
I think you mentioned
Katie?
One of the biggies for me is that we like things awfully loud and awfully big these days.
Mm-hmm.
And that can be just too much for some kids to manage. So making sure that if you've got kids who have sensory sensitivity to noise, having an area where there's quieter worship. And there's nowhere in the Bible that it says you have to actually be close to the band in order to be holy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it
mm-hmm.
just doesn't. So offering some choices and saying, you know, gee, it's getting kind of loud in here. Would you like to stand over by the glass doors because it's quieter there? That's an easy thing to do, and it requires an extra volunteer, but it doesn't really cost you any money at all.
Mm-hmm.
Also, one thing that makes me fret pretty frequently is medications. When we send kids on overnights for church camp or for mission trips, we've got to be really, really cautious with medications. I've seen situations where ministry leaders will say, well, you know what, we really trust our kids. We've never had an incident of anyone stealing medicine or sneaking anything in. And I think that's great, and I hope that that's true. But I think we really need to look at what's safe for kids. And we know that some of the medications that are used, for example, for attention deficit disorders, those medications are abused by kids, and kids will sell it, and they'll trade it, and or they'll steal it, and we don't want that to happen. That's dangerous for a number of reasons. So make sure that you've got really good safety guidelines in place, and that communication is upfront with parents. You know, I've had parents even argue with ministry leaders, well, no, this is his thing. He takes care of his medication himself at home. And that's fine at home. But when we've got 100 other kids, that's not an acceptable solution, and we're going to hang on to those meds for you.
Yeah, and one thing in relation to that, what we have done, especially at camp before, is there's a designated first ed tech or nurse who's going to administer those and be the keeper of those. We have everyone,
absolutely,
even adults, check in their medication, because kids will go through your bag to look for something. They could get confused. They could get upset. They could just take,
absolutely,
something. Everybody check. I check my things in and come get them. But then during that registration process, when we're getting that information from those parents, I have another volunteer there with that first aid tech. So that there's another set of ears hearing and checking that form to see when that child needs to get that medication. It's double accountability. It helps the first aid tech have another set of ears, because this is a big deal, you know, when they're going to get their medication for an overnight event,
right,
and how that's going to happen. So I love what you had to say about that. Go on.
Well, another thing that we've probably all noticed is that in a lot of middle and high school events, there's a lot of really fun and silly games. You know, there's shaving cream fights, and I've seen instead of water balloons, paint balloons tossed back and forth. And teenagers love that kind of stuff, most of them. So there are some kids who have special needs for whom those kinds of activities would be completely overwhelming, or kids with anxiety that think, oh, my gosh, if I get paint near my mouth, what if I swallow it? What if I die? Then my mom won't be able to find me. And they'll start to really perseverate on that worry. So it doesn't mean that we can't have those kinds of events. It just means that we've got to make sure that we go over some really clear guidelines with kids. I have this wonderful middle school minister in our community, and she was doing this activity with kids where they would put shaving cream on their face, and then it was like a race to see how many Cheetos you could throw at the kids, and it was sort of like Cheeto beard. I know, it was really cute, but she, and I looked at the picture initially and I thought, oh my gosh, so many kids would just completely have a meltdown over this. Or there would be kids maybe with issues with impulse control who would have gotten way too ramped up and maybe could have hurt somebody. Or so I thought, I,
and then,
you know,
might be a discipline problem when,
exactly,
when,
and then they're getting
activity,
in trouble,
they might not
and
have
we can't help it. Exactly.
Yes.
But she is just so brilliant, and she had this taped line, so there was a spectator area. So anybody who didn't want any shaving cream or Cheetos on them at all was in the spectator area, and it was a clear rule that that would not happen. And then there were clear rules about how many Cheetos you could throw, and then it was someone else's turn. And so it was huge, silly fun, but she was very clear in her guidelines, and it made everybody feel safe. So everybody could watch and either be disgusted by it or laugh or be silly, but it never got out of control. And so what I want people to hear is you don't have to stop planning those fun things, because a lot of times youth leaders use those as an example of of a bigger concept that they're trying to get mm-hmm. the kids to learn. And so we don't want to put the kibosh on them doing those fun kinds of things, because a lot of teens really think it's great and it's funny. Just make sure that you offer some choices and that you put some really good structure in place so that kids who are anxious or kids who maybe do have some sensory needs don't get upset if they don't want to participate in the same way.
And for my son, I think he could get as much by participating in that spectator area. And mm-hmm. I could picture him watching and laughing mm-hmm. and talking about it and coming home and even flapping his arms a little bit as he laughed
sure.
and told about it. And he was a participant as far as he's
uh-huh.
concerned.
Oh, absolutely.
But just that path,
absolutely. You don't have
path.
To have the shaving cream and Cheetos on to be a participant.
Yeah.
And so I think that's really good. And coupled with that, too, sometimes there's a lot of pressure for kids to go on mission trips. You know, you've got to go on the mission trip. You've got to, everyone's going, and it's going to be so great. And you know what? We have to be okay with the fact that it's not a great fit for everyone right this minute. There are seasons in kids' lives, in adults' lives, where maybe they will go on a trip. But for kids who have really significant separation anxiety, for example, the idea of going to another state or another country away from mom and dad can just be a huge cause of anxiety. And it's okay to say, if this isn't your thing, that's all right, because if everyone went to Mexico, nobody would be here. And we've got people right here in our community that need your love and support and prayers. So don't worry if you don't want to go this time. That's fine. And just affirm kids and affirm parents in that, because sometimes that can turn into a bit of pressure, and it doesn't need to. Or as we look at mission trips, talk a little bit about how we can make it work. My own child had a tremendous amount of fatigue when she was younger. That was just the way it was. And they made sure before she went on a trip that there was going to be an opportunity for her to take a nap, because, you know, kids are up and they're busy and they're doing all these service mm-hmm. projects, and that's great. But had she not had an opportunity for a little time out, she would have just been exhausted, and it could have triggered all kinds of different health issues, and we didn't want that. So that was a great accommodation. We had another student who really wanted to participate in a mission trip, but he has autism, and it was just going to be really difficult for him to share such close quarters with people the whole time. So they made arrangements so that his sleeping area was a little bit separate, and they did it all very carefully so that he was supervised and that it wasn't just one adult and mm-hmm. with him. And I mean, they took all of the safety precautions, but it allowed him that time away that he really, really needed in order to be successful with his peers during the day. And he had a lot to offer on that mission trip. He was really charged up to serve the people in that community, and it would have been a huge loss had he not been there. But he needed that time at night to just be on his own. So they made that happen for him.
I think this brings to mind an expression, and I believe, again, it's Barb Newman, who I have heard say that fair does not mean equal.
That's right.
In order for something to be fair for one of these children, mm-hmm. a lot of times we think fair means everyone's getting the same treatment. Well, mm-hmm. actually, my son and other children with special needs, for them to have the same expectations of them that are on everybody else is the most unfair thing.
Absolutely.
That can happen, you know.
Absolutely.
So, and that takes a little bit of pressure, I think, off of everybody. You know, it doesn't have to be this equal experience for everybody. We can do things a little bit differently, which mm-hmm. brings up our next question that you had this idea bringing this up, and I'm so glad you did. There's a term that if you're a special educator or a parent, you it's kind of a nebulous term that you have to learn to understand,
mm-hmm.
and that's
mm-hmm.
least restrictive environment. And I spent years trying to figure out what Noah's least restrictive environment was, and sure enough, once I got it figured out, it changed. Because he was changing and growing and developing. But can you talk about that term, least restrictive environment, what it means educationally? Because a lot of parents, if they're coming from a world of advocating for their child in the special education mm-hmm. system, then they have this idea for churches. I know I ran into this. And
right.
how we can understand it and what the implications for us are with that. And we've kind of already hit it, but let's now reframe this according to least restrictive environment, Katie.
Sure. Well, I always tell parents that when we think about least restrictive environment and that sort of legally what that means in terms of a child's education is that they should be able to participate in the environment that gives them the most access to what everyone else is doing as long as they're still making appropriate progress. So for every kid, that doesn't mean that they're going to be fully included in their pre-algebra class because maybe they don't have some of those concepts. So they might be with their typically developing peers, but they're not going to learn much math because it might be something that's not appropriate for them to work on at
mm-hmm.
that time. So I sort of explain it to parents like this. Finding the least restrictive environment is sort of like shopping for a pair of pants. You don't want your pants too tight, and you don't want them too loose. You want that just right fit because then you feel good, and you feel comfortable, and you look good, and it's that just right fit. So that's how we should plan for kids with disabilities, is finding that just right fit. So, and it goes back to your fair and equal conversation as well. Just because one child in the classroom needs a walker, are you going to give every single child in the class a walker? Well, no, it's not necessary. But if you want that child to be able to participate in an activity and they need some stability when they stand up, they're going to want that. And we wouldn't ever want to say, well, I'm sorry, you can't have your walker in here because, you know, that wouldn't be fair to the other
mm-hmm.
kids. Right?
Right.
Oh, right. It is fair because that helps that child to stand and move capably across the room and participate in whatever activity that it is. So when we're thinking about large-scale activities or special events, let's use our noise example again. If we're saying that the least restrictive environment for a kid is necessary for, a youth concert that they're going to and the kid really wants to go but it's just too loud, maybe instead of placing that kid right in front of the speakers, we let the kid hang out a little bit further back, or we provide a pair of headphones, or we ask mom or dad to send a pair of headphones
mm-hmm.
so they can enjoy the experience. Not everybody has to have a pair of headphones. That's okay. But we just want that just right fit for that
mm-hmm.
child. So, and it's important, I think, for parents, too, to remember that not every activity is going to be a great activity for every kid. So we've got to look at how can my child participate in a meaningful way. If, for example, you're doing a fundraiser and it's a car wash and your child really hates getting sprayed with water, instead of a parent saying, well, you shouldn't be doing a car wash because there's kids with sensory issues, instead you can say, wow, my child really wants to participate and help the group to earn money. Can he or she give directions in the parking lot? You go this way.
Can they stand and hold
this
way?
Hold
the
sign.
Like we have
welcome
a child with assistive hearing devices or something that
mm-hmm.
they cannot get wet or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and for a child that has a cast on their arm that can't get wet, for some reason we're much quicker to come up with a way they can
right.
partner in the activity. I don't know why that
right.
is.
Right.
But actually, there's tons of things exactly like that you say that, and again, it's communication with that parent and everyone
mm-hmm.
trusting one another and hearing
right.
what the goal is, which is for the child to feel a part, for them to be a part of the body. But not all the parts of the body have the same function, and we
that's
never
right.
expect
them to.
That's
right, and that's okay. Yeah,
exactly.
And sometimes I don't like that very much. Sometimes I wish I had different gifts than the ones I was given. But that's part of faith development and learning, too.
Absolutely.
But I think it's also important for ministry leaders to remember that if they have communication with a parent and the parent does come across maybe a little more forceful than the ministry leader was expecting, just remember, again, that grieving process, that what the parent might really be saying when he or she is saying, well, I don't think you should have this fundraiser because every kid can't participate in the same way, what that parent might be saying is, I really wish that I didn't have a kid with a disability. This makes me sad that he can't do this like everybody else.
Absolutely.
So as much as
hear that grief,
want to respond with, you know what, I'm trying to make everybody happy here, and it's really hard work being in a ministry, just to say, okay, well, let's figure this out together, how we might be able to do this going forward.
Absolutely. Absolutely. There are so many nuances to it, and I appreciate so much what you say about the grieving parent and the parent that you know, I have experienced, as Noah has grown up, missing a lot of things that other parents get to do. You know, on Sunday when everyone is at church talking about the birthday party that was the day before, they just didn't invite Noah to the party because they knew he couldn't do it. But then I've got a group of moms sitting around talking about how funny this was or how cute this was, and I can't contribute. You know, I'm not the mom that gets to talk about what happened at the game at the ballpark on Saturday, on Sunday, or anything like that. And there is a sense of isolation. And if we can train our ears to hear what may be under some of what the parent is saying, hearing that grief, and just their want for something, for some spirit that this child is made special and it is a vital, integral part of this community. It can prick our hearts and it can help us make some changes that sometimes aren't even huge and don't really change an event. Just provide a spot, maybe make room is a better word, that just makes room for someone that's different, maybe. In closing, my husband and I have a perspective we often call a mustard seed kingdom principle. Basically, we say Jesus called us to be faithful even with just that mustard seed worth of faith. And sometimes maybe some of the things that most impact events are small. And sometimes small things breed success because really you were faithful. One that comes to mind is I have a friend from South Georgia who's been on the show, and she and I talked about her church having Wednesday night meals. And a big problem with Wednesday night meals was they had trying to figure out a way for these families of disabled children to be able to participate in the fellowship meal. And the way they had their gym set up, the special needs room, which had a double door and really good visibility if you were sitting right by it, was all the way across the gym. It was near the serving line. But all of the eating tables were at the other end of the gym. And when someone realized it, they said, oh, we'll just flip-flop the order. And they designated a table right by the special needs room for those kids to be able to go to their sensory room after they ate and for the parents to still be able to be so near and so a part of the body of Christ. Just a small change, a small outside-the-box idea. Do you have any like those that you can just think of that we can offer listeners today
Think of a friend that I have whose son has autism, and he is just such a neat kid. I just love this kid, and he has participated in over the long term in the life of the church and has grown, and kids have just sort of learn to accept that he might respond differently or his jokes might sound a little different or he might need a break from the group from you know, from now and then, and it's okay. And they just, he's just who he is. And one day I bumped into him, and he's gone on mission trips and on outreach days, and he's at every party and all of these things because he feels so welcome and because he's part of the group. He just is. It's not that, hey, we're doing this really nice thing for him. It's just that he's part of the group. And I bumped into him one day in the lobby of the church, and I said, hey, how's it going for you? And he said, well, it's going fine, and I have something to tell you, Mrs. Weatherby. And I said, okay. And he said, you know, I used to have autism, but because I've been coming to this church, I don't have it anymore. And I just thought that was such a lovely way that he perceives himself, because he really feels like his autism just disappears when he's at church, because he is accepted for who he is. He's not the kid with autism. He's just himself. And that's what he has gained through being included in all of these outreach events. And so to me, I think about that almost every week, because I'd like that to be that way for every kid who has a disability. I'd like it to be that way for every person, for myself even, to be able to go to church and just be me and not have all of the baggage that we have, just to be loved by my church family. And that's really how he feels.
And that is a manifestation of kingdom come. That is us being the kingdom here. You know, Maranatha, come Lord Jesus, come.
Right.
If we can do that for everyone, everyone, that's what he wanted, and that's the way Jesus' kingdom looked when he was here. Katie, this has been so encouraging to me, and I pray for our listeners, has just uplifted them and given them a ton of ideas. But just in case they, you know, want somehow to hear more from you or get in touch with you or throw you a question, can you give out some of your contact information for how they can connect
sure.
with you, maybe through a website or Twitter or Facebook or whatever?
Right. They can find my blog at katieweatherby.wordpress.com, and Weatherby is W-E-T-H-E-R-B as in boy, E-E. So katieweatherby.wordpress.com, and they can also find me on Twitter at Katie L. Weatherby. And I'm on Facebook as well as Katie Livingston Weatherby. So I'd love to connect with anybody who has questions or wants to brainstorm or has been thinking of this and thinking at this point, there's this kid and I'd really like to brainstorm. Just, you know, give me a quick message and we'll put our heads together. And I guarantee that when we put our heads together, great things happen for the kingdom.
I believe it, too. I believe it. Thank you so much.
Oh, well, for Fancy, thanks for having me. Don't you want to move up to Ohio? We would have so much fun.
I've had several invitations to move to Ohio. It has been wonderful for me, through the show and through my blog and relationships that I've made, to just meet a whole new community. And
isn't it great?
You're one of the people that's part of that community and has just enriched my life and my perspective, and I just so appreciate you coming on talking about this. And I think I had asked you, I think I want to have you back on when we talk about families, families in crisis, and what it's like to be a family in crisis.
That
I think you
great.
And I talked about that. That's going to be our November series. But just such important, great things to share. And thank you so much. And you guys get in touch with Katie. She will get back with you. We can put our heads together and make a kingdom difference here.